And you are sailing with the Zephyr. This is FM 90.1 KZFR, Chico listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley of the Foothills. We are on the web at kzfr.org and have apps for your smartphones as well. Time for Ecotopia.
You're listening to KZFR 90.1 Chico, community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And this is Ecotopia, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological, with your hosts, Susan and Stephen Chudy. In just a few moments, we'll play an interview we recorded last week with Alan Myers, filmmaker, photographer, and director of Regenerating Paradise. We'll remind you that the opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily reflect the views of KZFR's staff, board of directors, programmers, or underwriters. Here's our interview with Alan Myers.
Alan Myers was born and raised in Paradise, California, as a third-generation member of the Ridge community. He left Paradise and gained a global perspective. He traveled the world for a number of years, living and working with communities as he documented those stories and lessons in an art project called Nomad Site. He's a storyteller and founder and director of the Earth Day Film Festival.
Alan returned to Paradise after the campfire, working with the community to identify regenerative solutions in the rebuild process, and is the director of Regenerating Paradise. His film, A Message from the Future of Paradise, is the guiding vision for the nonprofit. It has gained many accolades at film festivals around the world. And he has another film, We Are on Fire. It's a direct call to action promoted by the Sunrise Movement, Greenpeace, and Idle No More.
Welcome, Alan. We know how incredibly busy you are, and we really appreciate the time to record this interview with us. We have lots of things to talk about. You've been on Ecotopia before talking about some of these things, and we're going to go back to a topic that we have talked about, but we want to hear about it again and want to hear any progress that you've made, a big project for Regenerating Paradise. It's the on the site, it's called Paradise Community Village 2.0. Could you tell us about your vision for the Paradise Community Village?
Yeah, thanks, Susan. Thank you, Stephen. I'm honored to be on your show and getting to connect with your audience. I think I've said this before. I've been listening to KZFR since I was a kid, and I think made my first donation at 14 years old to 90.1. So the Paradise 2.0 concept was first initiated by one of our newest board members, Dr. Majdi Abu Najam, who is a professor at UC Davis. And he came to our Paradise Revival Festival that was held online in 2019 because of the pandemic, or sorry, 2020. And he heard from a community that identified nature and community as being core to the values of the Ridge. And when a call for submissions by the California Energy Commission went out looking at redefining mixed-use development in a carbon-constrained future, he saw Paradise as the perfect platform to bring this opportunity to. So we developed a team and we brought our community organizations together around a vision of what is possible after the fire, what is possible in this moment of the climate crisis, and started coming up with ideas. As the months went by, we were identifying developers and potential other potential partners. The last minute, we lost our developing partner, and we weren't able to submit to that grant. And rather than letting that take the wind entirely out of our sails, we had a solid team, professors from UC Davis, community-based organizations, and then also some technical expertise from some firms in the Bay. So we circled the wagons and talked about what the next step might be, knowing that we needed to identify a developer that would be willing to rise to this challenge. After many calls and meetings. We believe we've identified that developer. I'm not at liberty just to say just yet because we haven't really signed, those final agreements yet. But we're in a due diligence process. Ultimately, the role of Regenerating Paradise in this project, we are not developers. That's not our role. But what we want to do is surface the potential for our community at this moment. You know, there is a clear opportunity here and clear lessons that have been given to us through the disaster. So our hope is to connect with the community, community-based organizations who also feel the urgency of this moment and also see an immense amount of potential.
One of the things that has so impressed me in what I've read about the village is something that I think all communities need to be attending to. Mixed-use, dense, affordable housing. That should be the vision for the future for anyone wanting to build anywhere. And that vision seems that it can and should be replicated in all kinds of communities, including Chico.
Yeah, I mean, for audience members at home, I'm sure you're all well aware of the housing situation within our region. That's one of the pressure points that we want to explore with our community-based organizations and community members. The final design is, I think, is going to be something that will surprise us all, and I hope it does. But that will be because we really listen not only to our community-based organizations and members, but to what the land is calling for and what this moment is calling for. There's, we've been developing places like Legos, like building blocks, like, okay, so here's our water system truncated here. Here's our buildings truncated here, energy. And what we're missing is this very obvious and necessary lesson from nature that all of this is connected. And our approach to be outsiders of this world is not accurate to the reality of this world. And it's time for us to come back into a relationship with nature, not just in heart and in showing up in it, but also how we develop on this land. And so that's really what I'm interested and excited about as we explore this development opportunity.
Could you give us, Alan, a little picture? Will this be a single development, housing all over Paradise, clusters of development? Please give us an image of that. I realize.
If I was going to dream it up right now, it would be something that was, again, in harmony with nature. So working with the water systems, working with the topography and the soil systems, and really diving into that. And then also recognizing that our region historically is on the ridge anyways, is on a 3 to 5 year burn cycle. That's a low intensity burn. That's a low, that's not our mega fires, but historically the chaparral, the madrone, the manzanita, that brush is meant to burn on a 3 to 5 year scale. Mm-hmm. So looking at how we can come back into relationship with fire, with the land there, understanding what wants to arise, what is the potential of this place, and how can we be a part of that and better stewards of it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish.
I just wanted to continue to answer Stephen's question, which is what could that look like? I mean, it's hard to say, but I think the feeling is there of understanding that the way we've been doing things isn't working. I think the campfire taught us that mm-hmm. we can't go back and do the same things and expect different results. We have to do things differently. My hope is that this development, whatever form it takes, I hope that it serves as an acupressure point to ripple throughout the community, that it serves to inspire others to also find the potential that is latent within their place and then go beyond. beyond Paradise, beyond the Ridge, Chico, Butte County, and around around our western-facing Sierras, which are burning.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the partners or some of the relationships you've established? There's a group called Regenesis Group. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how they are feeding into this project?
Yeah, I think it's okay that I talk about them. They're a consultant group and academics. Bill Reed, the principal there, wrote the certification process for LEED. He wrote the code of LEED. And he's on our committee and on our calls and helping guide this process. So again, we're still early on, but they're helping us surface the right questions to be asking to identify the potential of our place.
And Impact is another group of people.
Yeah, Impact, it works closely with Regenesis as a regenerative developer. And, you know, that was our biggest hang up in the last time we applied for the grant, is our developer wasn't ready to think to the scale that our place calls for. And this developer is. So, you know, we're in that relationship building process and exploratory process. But they've been showing up at every meeting and are eager to contribute to the potential of Paradise.
And what's the role of UC Davis? You talked about that a little bit.
UC Davis was, you know, one of the faculty there, Dr. Majdi Abu-Najjam, is also now on the board of Regenerating Paradise. And he first discovered this opportunity and also saw its potential impact for Paradise. And the role of UC Davis in this project would be deeply engaged in the educational component of it. So redefining what it means to live in the wild urban interface during a climate crisis, during these mega fires, how we can redefine sustainability. You know, no longer are we called to just do less harm, which is basically sustainability, just keeping things as they are.
Right.
That is not working anymore.
Right.
And we need new measurements, new standards for how we live on the planet.
So does Regenerating Paradise have a timeline, or you know, what are you looking at in terms of how this will play out in the next few years?
Yeah, well, we did receive some grant funding from North Valley Community Foundation to do this kind of feasibility and community input process. So, you know, we're designing that currently, and we'll be engaging with the community, and already are meeting with different heads of organizations to hear, you know, hear their opinions and ideas of what it means to be living in this time in Paradise. And so that's, you know, what I'm learning in this work is that it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But to do transitional work, to go against the standards and norms that call us so easily, you know, it's that convenience pattern that really draws us back and then sets us up for future disaster case scenarios. So there is an incubation period. There is a lot of work to be done. But we're working on it every day, and we will be engaging with the community in these coming days, weeks, and months to hear from them as we also simultaneously develop a team that would realize this project's vision.
It sounds really exciting. It also sounds like an enormous amount of work. And it's good because you're going towards something that will be valuable not just to your community. Again, I think it could be a model for a lot of communities who are dealing with, of course, the same kinds of things. In here in Chico, we have a group of people who are working toward, you know, trying to do infill and trying to avoid and oppose the urban sprawl projects that, as you say, are not in good relationship with the, I mean, you didn't say they're not in good relationship to the earth, but I say they're not good in good relationship with the earth. And I think in some ways we need a paradigm shift so that people put that as the priority, that everything that we do in the human world needs to attend to our relationship with the earth. And people don't necessarily think that way.
Yeah, I mean, we're still, I mean, I hear that, and I think, yeah, we're in a moment of transitioning out of that old story, which is kind of isolation-based, you know, this perspective that humans are here just kind of observing the planet from a distance and taking from it and, you know, expecting that things are constant and that... that we are somehow separate. And that's not the case. You know, our satisfaction often is portrayed as being consumptive based. You know, we're marketed to constantly.
Right.
And I think a lot of people also feel that that isn't the case. And it's just a temporary fix, and that the most meaningful aspects of their life are the relationships that they have. And I think we're at a moment now of really highlighting that and expanding that definition, expanding our definition of relationship beyond just our human relationship, but back to a nature relationship.
Right.
And I think people do feel that, you know, they... Right now, people are probably chomping at the bit with their starts, getting excited about planting their garden. And those are a reality that exists for many of us. And they just don't happen to be in the headlines or at the top stories. But I think people feel it, and we're ready to do things differently.
I love it. I hope so. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. You're an artist and a filmmaker, and you are a part of Street Art Action. Could you talk about Street Art Action? Tell us what it is. Tell us about your involvement in it and a little bit more about your art.
Thanks. Yeah, so I guess I'll start with the art. I'm a photographer and filmmaker, and when I returned to my parents' home, to the home I grew up in with them, I took a portrait of them in the ashes of their home to mark this moment in history, and also to serve as a reminder of our resilience. You know, I hope that my kids, my grandkids can look back and see where their ancestors came from and what this moment was. And then from there, I ended up photographing over 60 families, friends, neighbors, community members on the Paradise Ridge, Magalia, as well, after the fire of them in the ashes of their homes. And then in 2019 and 2020, we saw more fires, and I realized that this wasn't something that was unique to me alone. And so I've gone to Greenville, I've gone to Grizzly Flats and met with families there. And part of what happens in this exchange is, you know, they're very curious of where I am, you know, having lost paradise, having lost my family's home. So we're in conversation. It's also a way for me to help process my own loss. And for them, it's a way to feel seen. When these disasters are so big, it can feel like we might feel overlooked, and we're asked to recover so quickly. Mm-hmm. And to take a moment and pause in grief with somebody and feel seen in that loss, I think offers a profound opportunity to then heal. Once we're able to hold up that pain for somebody else to see, it becomes, it's out of us in a way, and it's held by somebody. So I have this series of photographs, and I'm also part of some climate justice groups, and they reached out to me and asked if one of the subjects would be willing to be a part of this art action. And so I reached out to my friend Carrie Max, who I photographed in the ashes of her home, and she said that she would be honored to be part of it. And so it's an art action calling for the defunding of climate chaos, meaning asking the banks to defund fossil fuel investment, knowing that they are contributing to our climate-driven disasters. They are an element. They are the accelerant. You know, certainly Bank of America or Chevron was not the spark of the campfire, but our system-wide use and abuse of this planet to continually burn fossil fuels is contributing to a changing climate. The head of CAL FIRE identified that. For the campfire, scientists around the world are identifying that. And so we want to remove that ingredient. We want to transition away from fossil fuels. And so to make them see what we're experiencing. So this is an art action that's taking place around the country. 30,000 3.5 by 5.5 foot images are being sent around the country to different climate activists and organizations to be pasted up into their communities. So one of the images, I'm one of six artists that is contributing to this project, and the photograph of my friend Carrie Max is being pasted up around the country, calling for the defunding of the climate crisis.
Are we going to have anything here in Chico?
I sure hope so. I will be in Chico this weekend, and I'm hoping to rally around some of my fellow climate activists. And you know, there's different ways that we can do this. People can still get online and go to stopthemoneypipeline.org to sign up to receive a free kit. Six images are sent for free to anybody who signs up. And there's different ways we can go about this. You know, we can create a pop-up art exhibit. So featuring each of the artists, we can do a demonstration in front of a financial institution. We can paste it up onto a building. And that can be done as an act of civil disobedience, and it can be done in an act in collaboration with a property owner.
Let me just briefly jump in and mention Bill McKibben's new group, Third Act, which is for senior citizens who want to do something in their declining years. And it is also targeting the big banks, particularly Bank of America and Wells Fargo. And they're doing enormous work to get those outfits to divest from fossil fuels.
That's wonderful. I mean, we know that, I mean, at this point, we've seen inaction. You know, my short film, We Are on Fire, goes back to Richard Nixon talking about how humans are affecting the climate in a negative way that is going to impact future generations. For decades, politicians and leaders have been telling us that they will act and that we have to act. Nobody is doing anything fast enough. We are seeing that. The climate crisis is already here. And so we must divest from fossil fuels. We must enact policies that recognize the dangers of continuing to burn fossil fuels.
Is the Earth Day Film Festival that you direct, is that traveling, or is that something that we can see here in Butte County?
Oh, thanks for asking about that one. That is a dear project that, because of the pandemic, we were scheduled to open on March of 2020, and we were, you know, one day we had 100 people at our opening event. The next day, all events were mandatorily shut down. Yeah. We had no time to pivot. And since then, you know, I was the founder and director of that. And because of my obligations with Paradise and with the continuing uncertainty around in-person gatherings, we are currently dormant. That doesn't mean that we're off entirely. It just means that we're assessing the situation and looking at opportunities to come back.
Yeah, good.
Could we switch gears a little bit? You mentioned in your note to us, we can talk about climate change, we can talk about PG&E, how talking about one doesn't negate the other. Important point. Could you amplify on that for us, please?
Thanks. Yeah, I think this is really important, and I understand the sensitivity in talking about climate change as it relates to the campfire, because there is this automatic protective defensiveness that goes up around the story of paradise, and each has their own perspective, certainly. When we know that corporate mismanagement was the cause, I mean, they did plead guilty to 84 counts of murder. So that cannot be ignored or negated or overshadowed by the role that climate change played. But that doesn't mean that climate change didn't play a role.
Right.
We are not, this is not zero sum. Mm-hmm. And the reality is they are connected, because PG&E is on a profit-driven approach. Their process is extraction of resource energy production for profit for shareholders that are not necessarily in our community. That is their model. So when we look at how can we solve the problem of corporate mismanagement and abuse by, say, somebody like PG&E, when we look at how can we solve the problem of climate change and what the role that it plays in our disasters, there is a system there that we can start to look at and see that the solution is something that many, if not all of us, can get behind.
Right.
So, for example, I would love to see a community-based microgrid that is more beholden to its community members than its shareholders, producing energy locally that not only then provides clean jobs and good-paying jobs, but also addresses the role of climate change. By doing energy locally, we're not going to want to throw up a coal-fired power plant, but we might be interested in setting up, say, a solar farm on the south and west sloping hills leading up into paradise along Skyway. We might be interested in erecting wind turbines to harness the high winds that fueled the fire.
Yeah.
Wind turbines, you know, at Jarbo Gap, you know, and using that clean energy, employing the community and powering our community with safe, clean, local energy.
So do you see a local energy component as part of the Paradise Community Village?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's yeah. Cool. I mean, yeah, that there are no ideas that we're at this point constraining ourselves by. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what this moment calls for.
Right.
Yeah. Another example, and one thing that I really like, Dr. Majdi Abu-Najam says, is how can we turn our threats into opportunities? And this is, you know, also in the school of permaculture, that the problem is also the solution.
Yeah.
And so when we look at, another problem that we face is forest management and a forest that's changing. We have immense beetle kill, which is also has been cited in scientific journals as being accelerated by climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we take that wood that is potential fuel for megafires and use that as the solution? Well, removing it and using it in a biomass facility, or using it in compost or biochar. So looking at ways that we can incorporate that into, you know, the story of paradise, but also into this development projects or things that we're exploring.
I think that's all really exciting, and I think we need those kinds of visionaries, and I think they need, you know, greater access to the news world, which seems to be consumed by disasters and not by visions and solutions. So it's so good that you're bringing these things to us. Let's talk a little bit about water on the ridge. I, of course, one of the things that's been happening in the last, year or two since Paradise needs to have to be able to make money from its water. And so the PID and the sewer project have been the subjects of much debate, and I'm wondering how you see water on the ridge and what you see as the problem and the opportunities.
Thanks. Yeah, well, one thing's for sure, when and if water is piped off and down the hill, it will not go back up.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And that is very troubling because it is a generational decision.
Yes.
It will affect generations to come. And personally, at this point, it feels incredibly rushed, and it feels that the voices that are loudest in the room are not the people that are, that call the ridge home. They're not the people that, have lived with that water for generations. They are special interest groups, big ag in the valley, who is financing and promoting a solution that says the only way that your Paradise Irrigation District is going to be sustainable is if you pipe your water off the ridge. I do not buy that. I don't think that's the only option.
I don't either.
No. Mm-hmm.
And I hope that people listening to this feel the immense gravity of this decision and call in, or, you know, write your council members, write PID, say do not send water off the ridge. There is a solution where, you know, unfortunately, PID was not involved in the lawsuit and is only receiving backfill from the state, as I understand it. And for them to remain soluble, an option that seems most attractive to me, and what I've heard from other experts on the issue, Cliff, who used to be the PID director, is very active on this. And the recommendation there is that PID is folded into the town. It becomes, you know, right now it's a special district. It's out, it's doing its own thing. But the town of Paradise has money, and a lot of it. And they've been sitting on it looking for, you know, ways to also stay soluble. But they're... they have immense amounts of money to do things that would be in the best interest in the longevity of the ridge. And this is one of those opportunities. So to have PID folded into the town, that is absolutely what I would like to see, versus a incredibly impactful and irreversible process of piping PID, Paradise Water, off of the ridge. Mm-hmm.
So is there a lot of support for that? Is there a lot of talk in Paradise about that potential? And is there a campaign or anything that's going on to help that happen?
Or not happen?
Yeah, well, I know that Hold Our Water is, I forget the acronym at this moment.
How?
Yeah, thanks. Hold Our Water. Yeah, they're active. I think we're also seeing a continual sorry, one second. A community that has been traumatized and is at capacity. So for the town, it's just, you know, they are working tirelessly every day to get the basics back up and running, you know, fixing the roads, underground utilities, these basic things. And then for the community itself, they are overwhelmed with their own individual projects of rebuilding. Mm-hmm. And so what we have is what we see after many disasters. We saw it in New Orleans. We saw it in in Haiti, that these disaster affected communities, that large special interest groups who have the capacity to have their voice heard are getting what they want. And by many definitions, it could be called disaster capitalism, that those that were hardest hit and most affected aren't actually being able to have their voice heard because they're not in a position to. They're meeting every single day just trying to get by.
Right.
So yeah, it's incredibly troubling. We saw it with a lot of the debris removal. We saw it with the tree removal. You know, there was many groups that would have wished to see the biomass remain on the ridge, recognizing that, yeah, maybe they're dead trees, but how about, a chipping facility to at least keep that material on the land and retain moisture. And now we're talking about not only are we losing that moisture, off of the ridge, but we're talking about now piping our water. We're talking about putting in a sewer line. Well, you know, I don't think that that there is such a thing as wastewater. Sure, water can carry pollutants, mm-hmm. but water itself is water. And sure, it may be carrying waste products, but piping any of that off of the ridge during this climate crisis, during these record droughts and fire seasons, is a bad idea because it only adds to the arid conditions and potential increased fire danger.
Yeah. We're going to shift gears one more time. You have really been focused in the last umpteenth years now on how communities can respond to disaster in regenerative ways. And you mentioned a few things already, but I would like to hear, we would like to hear, right, Steve?
Yes, indeed.
We'd like to hear more about some of the work that you've done that's focused on regenerative disaster response.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, what we see after a disaster is, the experts come in with their ideas and they are called upon to rebuild what was. And FEMA will tell you, you know, they're not there to really question any of the systemic underlying conditions, but to rebuild what was. And I think many of us recognize that after disaster, there is an opportunity for us to do things differently. Sure, we're going to miss and we're going to grieve what was. There's no doubt about it. I absolutely miss my family's home and, you know, the homes that I played in as a kid, but they're not coming back. And so a regenerative response is first to grieve, to let go of what was, so we may open up to what is next. And what's next is what the community decides. And that's not going to be, you know, what any of us really envision or expect. But it's done through listening and through conversation and hearing what it is that the community wants. I've gone to Japan to learn about their stories of recovery shortly after the campfire. And I learned a lot there. I learned that after disaster, individuals are guaranteed housing, no matter their situation.
Wow. After
disaster. And when I met with community leaders there, they would ask me, what's the most challenging aspect in the recovery of paradise? And every time I would say housing. And every single time they would look at me with shock that in California, one of the wealthiest states and the wealthiest nations in the world is unable to guarantee housing for its citizens after a disaster. That was always the response. And it still troubles me that we are not able to guarantee housing. That it's, and I think there is a cultural component there that we are so taught of individualism, of, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But what we see in nature and what we see after disaster is a community that doesn't fit into that, really. You know, the community came together after the fire in ways that I think surprised many people, that it wasn't, you know, chaos coming off of the ridge. It was neighbors picking up neighbors, making sure everybody got out. And that sense of relationship and connection is something that I would like to see carried forward. I think it would inform a regenerative response to rebuilding that is beyond an individual, you know, response, but is on a collective and community response.
You're also working with the town of Malden that was destroyed by fire last year. You've been facilitating conversations between their town council and others, developing a community gathering. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Malden.
Yeah, so one of Regenerating Paradise's board members is Dr. Bob Stilger. He's a mentor of mine and helped us form our organization and take our first steps out of what were informal community gatherings. And so in a very similar way, we're taking that wisdom and lessons learned to their community. So in a similar way that Bob showed up in Paradise, we're now showing up in Malden. And, you know, very similarly, we see a group of people who are in a sprint, you know, just every day trying to get as much done as they could, as they can. And are also feeling like there's something here, that there's an opportunity here to do things differently. And we want to help them identify those things. And that's having meetings where they get to talk about what was. And then they also get to share what they hope to bring from the past and what they hope to create anew. And not necessarily race back in rebuilding exactly what was lost.
Right, right. And you're going to Brazil to do some work with communities affected by the Vale dam break. Could you talk about that?
That's right. So in this, you know, there's an element of my work that looks to connect stories and looks to learn from others. And that's why I went to Japan, knowing that others have faced disaster and that this isn't something that's novel and sits alone. And that a lot of that has to do with how we've been living on the planet and out of relationship with the planet. And so in 2019, in January 2019, a Vale operated dam broke, and Vale is the largest mining corporation in South America. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, for folks at home listening, you could relate them to Brazil's PG&E in essence. They're massive and they're involved in government and they're protected, and were curious of how their community is responding to corporate mismanagement. And what's fascinating right off the bat is the top executives went to jail.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And when we talk about, you know, this story of, oh, well, there's so much, you know, so much corruption in South America, people like that always get off. Well, in this case, it was Brazil who sent their top executives to jail for the murder, you know, for the loss of 240 lives.
Wow.
When the dam broke, 240 people were buried in 50 feet of mud.
Wow.
In our story, 85 people lost their lives from a spark from mismanaged power lines. You know, that hook that broke was set to be, was identified as needing to be replaced. Well, similar with Vail, they knew that this dam was jeopardized and could break. The difference, though, is that in Brazil, they went to jail, and in California, we have yet to see somebody truly held accountable.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'll be going down to. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'll be going down to meet with people firsthand, people who experienced the dam break, and meeting with journalists to help connect me to stories that I can bring back to our community so that we can learn. And I will also be sharing our stories from Paradise to connect this moment on this planet, that these disasters and how we live are connected.
That's really great work. We would like you to tell our listeners how they can learn more about Regenerating Paradise. There's so much going on. Could you tell us how they can connect with you or connect with the work?
Oh, yes. This is the point. This is the time, everybody, when you pull out your pen and paper, yeah, or you type into your phone, you type in regeneratingparadise.org, and you go to our website, you sign up for our newsletter. We send them out quarterly, you know, every few months. We have one scheduled coming up, and we want to be able to connect with you because especially in these next few days, few weeks, we will be doing outreach for this community input process for this new model of development that we're looking to pursue on the Ridge. And we want to hear from folks how they would like to be living in relationship with the planet. What does home mean to them? These are questions that we want to ask, and we want to be able to connect with you. So go to regeneratingparadise.org, sign up for our newsletter, take a look at our website, and feel free to reach out to me directly, Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at regeneratingparadise.org.
Thank you so much, Allen. Allen is amazing. I can't even imagine how many balls he has in the air right now. He is the director of Regenerating Paradise. He's also a filmmaker, a photographer, and a relentless worker to help people recover from disaster through community relationships and community working together. So we wish you well, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to be with you both. Thank you.
You are the new day. You are the new day. I will love you more than me and more than yesterday. If you can but prove to me you are the new day, send the sun in time for dawn, let the birds all hail the morning, love of life will urge me say, you are the new day. When I lay me down at night, knowing we must pay.
stay yesterday. Force that we as humans know could slow worlds and end it all. Lie around me where they fall before the new day.
That was You Are the New Day, sung by the King Singers out of Cambridge. That's sort of our new closing theme in recent months. We don't always get a chance to play it in full. Thought you might enjoy hearing it tonight. You Are the New Day. We also want to follow up on that interview with Alan Myers by summarizing a recent Associated Press article that also appeared in the Enterprise Record. It's a very different approach to adapting to climate change. This article was called "For Climate Migrants in Bangladesh, A Town Offers New Life." It was written by Julas Alam. Bangladesh, formerly East Pakistan, as we know, is subject to sea level, not only to sea level rise, but to frequent flooding even before sea level rise. Cyclones, flooding, millions of people are displaced at too frequent intervals in Bangladesh. New project is centered in the city of Mangla. It's inland from the Bay of Bengal, about 30 kilometers. It's on a river that is also a port leading to the sea. They are welcoming people affected by climate change, unusual in the world. They've lost people who've lost land due to erosion, flooding, rising waters. The city of Mangla is doubling its population, has already added about 150,000 people to its population. The first step they took was to build a levee to protect the city from the river. It's still subject to flooding, although not so much to rising sea levels. Then they developed an industrial zone. They have widened the river to accommodate more big ships. They're building a rail line to India. The World Bank predicts that 19 million climate refugees will need housing by 2050 in Bangladesh. And Bangladesh leaders and imaginative planners have identified a dozen similar towns that could offer housing for up to 10 million climate migrants over the next decade. And for many, this provides an alternative. Their jobs in factories, their jobs in the seaports. It's an alternative to moving to and finding work in overcrowded cities. It's called by people transformative adaptation. Very similar to what Alan Myers is talking about in regenerating paradise. So it's not just remediating climate change, so they are building bigger levees and so forth, but figuring out imaginative alternatives to provide people with jobs, with ways to resettle their lives after their homes are destroyed, after their lives are disrupted due to climate change. I have, Steve, a little bit of reservation about this based on the dependence here on the global economy. The idea here is clearly to make more stuff and be able to ship it down the river and out into the ocean. But that's a problem that's going on globally, and as long as there's a demand for stuff, there will be a demand for factories. and a brief mini editorial. Again, that article for Climate Migrants in Bangladesh offers a town offers new life. You can Google that, just Google Climate Migrants Bangladesh to read the full article. Or if you're an Enterprise Record subscriber, you can go on to the ER and read the full article. This is Ecotopia on KZFR. Up next, Bobby Tryon, North State Give and Take, Ginger Nichols on Radioactive at 6:30. And of course, we always appreciate hearing from our listeners. EcotopiaKZFR@gmail.com. Send us ideas for shows. We also welcome potential interviewees on Ecotopia. There are a number of people out there doing in the Chico, the Butte County area, doing great work on environmental issues. We welcome you on the show. If you'd like to publicize the work of your group, tell us about projects going on in town, solicit help from volunteers, send us an email at ecotopiakzfr.org, and we'll try to get you on a show right away. We also continue to maintain our website, good place to go. We have recordings of all of our recent shows, going back, actually, not so much recent. Our website goes all the way back to the beginnings of the show in 2010. And we have our resources page, which provides links to people who've been interviewed on the show, connections to their work. So thank you very much for listening to Ecotopia. Join us again next week. Disagree sans jugement.